first day of a three-day council meeting, our April meeting. Just like to remind everybody to put your phone on vibrate or turn it off, please. I'd also like to recognize Pete Jensen, the chairman of the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Councils, in the audience. You're here for one day, Pete? One day. Okay. We also have some other guests today that will be presenting. Today's sort of a show and tell or a question and answer. There's a lot of presentations, not a lot of action, but some important information being discussed. I'm going to go right into the second agenda item, reports on recent activities, and go to the executive director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple things. John Rip and I will be attending the chairman's meeting in New Orleans, May 7th to 11th. Of note on that agenda will be budget and also the implementation of the new Magnuson Act, which we'll get a little bit of the flavor of that today. In terms of the budget, we've been level funded again, which is not a good thing. It's basically a decrease in funds available. However, there is some hope that NIMS might be able to give us additional funding, and we're going to talk about it at the May chairman's meeting. And I've been working closely with Pat Kirkle, who's going to try to help us get some additional funds as well. So be nice to Pat this week. I heard her laugh. Let me see. We had a conference call with Bill Hogarth last week, and it appears that there's tentatively planned another national conference, not quite as extensive as the Managing Fisheries 1 and 2, but there will be a national conference on the new Magnuson Act reauthorization and implementation in September in Washington. That's tentatively planned now, and we'll be working on that and discussing that in more detail in May. But all the council members would be invited to that. There's been some new information on monkfish, although it's not on the agenda. If you go into tab 10, you'll see some comments on some proposed rules and interim rules. And I advise you all to look at tab 10, and if you have any questions, perhaps we could discuss it under other business. Let me see. The next executive committee is May 16th. And if any members have anything they'd like to have discussed at executive committee, please send me an email. Also, pleased to announce that at the very surprised and very appreciative that at the Maine Fishermen's Forum, the board of directors gave the council staff an award, which was very nice. So we're very appreciative, and I wanted to let you folks know that. That was the first public service award that the Maine Fishermen's Forum had given out, and it was to council staff, so we were very pleased about that. Monday, at the end of the day, we received a letter from Pat, and maybe she asked her to go into it in a little more detail, about the federal and state permitting issues where she's been working closely with Massachusetts to talk about addressing permitting issues with groundfish and other species, the difference between state and federal permits. So there's a proposed rule out with comments required by May 7th. And I'll ask Pat if she might be able to touch on that a little bit. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any questions for Paul? Okay, go on to Pat.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I have a number of items, so I'll try to move through them quickly. Let's see, starting with Amendment 13 for scallops, the notice of availability published in the Federal Register on March 19th and the proposed rule published on April 6th. The comment period for the amendment closes on May 18th, and the comment period for the proposed rule closes on May 7th. Multi-species leasing of days at sea. So far this fishing year, which the 2006 fishing year, which is almost over. Total leases processed, 495. Total leases approved, 472, and that represented 542 distinct permits. Total number of days at sea leased, 11,279.69. Average cost, $310.16. Highest cost, $4,312.20. We published a proposed rule in the Federal Register on March 12th to implement the tax for cod haddock and yellowtail in the U.S.-Canada management area. The comment period on that closes on April 11th. The proposed tax are 494 metric tons for cod, 6,270 metric tons for haddock, and 900 metric tons for yellowtail. We filed a temporary rule on April 6th, which was effective on that day, to raise the trip limit for the limited access multi-species days at sea vessels fishing for yellowtail flounder in the U.S.-Canada management area. We've increased the trip limit to 25,000 pounds for the remainder of the fishing year. That rule will actually publish today. Closed Area 2, Yellowtail Special Access Program. Based on the TAC for Georges Bank Yellowtail proposed for the U.S.-Canada management area, we published a proposed rule on March 12th with a comment period ending on April 11th that would allocate zero trips for 2007 fishing year. Monkfish, as Paul mentioned, we have published a proposed rule seeking comments on Framework 4 to the Monkfish FMP. We published it on March 20th, and the public comments will be accepted through April 19th. However, during our review of the proposed framework, we've become increasingly concerned about the status of that monkfish resource and its ability to rebuild within the 10-year time frame. As a result, we've scheduled a special SAR for monkfish. I think it's scheduled for July 9th through 11th, where they will review the biological reference points and the status of the stock relative to those biological reference points. And we're going to delay making a decision on Framework 4 until we have the results of that SAR. In the interim, we've taken a more precautionary approach and implemented what the council proposed for the northern management area, which was a reduction for that area. In the south, where as the councils had proposed an increase, we decided to stay at the 2006 level again until we have the results of the SAR workshop in July, and we'll make a final decision then on management measures for the 2007 fishing year. The final rule for the 2007 through 2009 herring specifications filed yesterday and will publish today. Those specifications are as proposed. So it includes the 50,000 metric ton Area 1A TAC in 2007, but in 2008-2009, that's reduced to a 45,000 metric ton Area 1 TAC. The final rule for Amendment 1 for herring published on March 12th. The revised management boundaries are effective on April 11th, and the limited access program in the purse seine fixed gear only area will be effective on June 1st. On March 30th, of this year, we notified 81 vessel owners that their boats had pre-qualified for one or more of the herring limited access permits. The remainder of the permit holders were sent an application and invited to apply for the permits. Under Atlantic mackerel, squid, and butterfish, notice availability for the draft supplemental environmental impact statement for Amendment 9. Published on April 6th. The comment period on that closes on May 21st. And there's a number of different things being proposed in that amendment that I won't take the time to go through. The recreational specifications, 2007 recreational specifications for summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass, published on March 15th, with comments accepted through March 30th. At the council's request, we published a final rule to increase the weight used to measure net mesh of 120 millimeters or greater to 8 kilograms. That was published in the Federal Register on February 26th, and the effective date is May 1st for that. We published a proposed rule on April 6th to implement regulations. This is the permit rule that Paul was referring to implement regulations that would prohibit all limited access vessels except American lobster permitted vessels from fishing for federally managed species for which the vessel would be permitted to possess. Okay, let me try to explain this to myself. vessels that have limited access permits are eligible to renew those permits will be unable to fish until they have renewed those permits under the proposal. And this closes what we consider to be a fairly large loophole in the regulations, which allows someone right now an entire year to renew their permit so they can effectively delay doing that, fish under state regulations, and then wait till later in the year and fish under the federal rules as well. So the comment period on that rule closes on May 7th. Has one other major provision that closes another, what we consider to be a loophole. It proposes a measure that would modify the vessel replacement provision such that only one vessel replacement would be allowed within the permit year. Except in those situations where the vessel has sunk or been rendered inoperable and non-repairable. So that would prevent people from going back and forth between vessels by transferring their permit. And on April 4th, we held our biannual U.S.-Canada Steering Committee meeting with the Maritime Region of Canada in Boston. We have four active work groups under that steering committee that have met since our last steering committee meeting. And so we got reports from those work groups. One of them is a protected resource work group that's working on collaborating between Canada's implementation of their Species at Risk Act and our ESA. We also talk about collaborating on whales and turtles. We have a habitat work group that's been looking at a benthic classification model that both countries feel has some potential for transboundary application. We have an oceans working group that's working on a Gulf of Maine ecosystem overview report. And then we also agreed terms of reference for the upcoming track for groundfish for this June and an agenda for the TMGC September meeting. We had a meeting on March 28th and 29th with the two councils on Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization, implementation, and Dan Morris is here and is going to fill you in on that later. At the council's request, we sent out a letter to all scallop permit holders clarifying that a bushel basket is no longer a bushel basket. I know the herring amendment won, fairly complicated implementation and the permit holder letter, a little bit hard to follow. So we also did an insert in Commercial Fisheries News questions and answers on the Herring Amendment 1 implementation. And that's it.
Thanks, Pat. Any questions for Pat? Dr. Pierce.
Well, first, Pat, thank you for moving forward to address the permitting issues. That's been troubling Massachusetts and other states for quite a long time. You identified some loopholes that prompted states waters fishing for groundfish and other species, and that's a problem that you've now, you're working with our staff, acted upon. So much appreciated. We'll provide some formal comments regarding those proposed rules. Pat, you mentioned that with monkfish, interim action is going to be taken, that you're going to keep the southern monkfish quota at the 06 level. You are moving forward to have another assessment of monkfish. My question is, what additional information was brought to your attention that prompted you to not accept the council's numbers as to, you know, what the limit should be, and instead you decided to go with the 06 level? Because I thought we had all our information in hand when we as two councils made our decisions relative to what those limits should be.
I don't think it was additional information, Dave, so much as a concern that maybe we hadn't looked at the biological side of it closely enough. And that's what prompted this special SAW-SARC review. As I said, we haven't made a final decision on Framework 4. We haven't made a final decision on what the fishing measures will be for 2007. But we felt that we really needed another look at the status of the resource before we could make those final decisions, and that we should be precautionary in the interim, given the timing, given that the earliest we could do that is July. I would point out that I've got the TAC report here for May through December 2006, and for that time period, the southern area TAC for monkfish is already at 121%. So it's clear that the measures last year were not constraining the monkfish mortality even to the level that we had hoped. So again, I think we felt it was necessary to take one more look at this before we made final decision for the last 3 years of the management program.
Okay, thank you. Before other business on the third day, I'll talk to you and your staff more about monkfish to get some further clarifications. You mentioned the U.S.-Canadian Steering Committee. Was mackerel on your agenda?
Well, mackerel is on the agenda every time, at my request, just to keep it in front of the Canadians. And so it was on the agenda. It was a very brief discussion item. I just reminded them that they had committed to doing a track with us on mackerel in 2008 and asked whether we were still on track for that, and they said that they were, and then also suggested to them that there were some preliminary discussions that could occur prior to that, and they said what they always say, which is nothing.
just one more question. This is with regard to yellowtail, George's Bank yellowtail. Specific to New Bedford interests, actually the interests of other ports, but I know that from New Bedford you received a number of letters, maybe emails, regarding increasing the trip limit on yellowtail early on. Thank you for increasing the limit. I believe the increase will take place around the middle of April, so it'll be about 2 weeks with the raised limit. Would you please provide us with your rationale as to why it was not possible for you to increase the limit earlier on?
It was effective April 6th, the increase in the trip limit. We've of course been monitoring this very closely, and in fact, at one point, we're asking for daily updates on monitoring and projections. And when we increased the trip limit the first time to the 10,000 pounds, the projections were that we would achieve something around 92% of the TAC, plus or minus some percentage. And so we thought that was a fairly reasonable response at that point. And that was based on what we knew about the days at sea that were still remaining, as well as looking at activity during this time of the year last year. And I was particularly concerned that we not go over this TAC, especially because the yellowtail TAC for next year is so low, but we didn't want to be in a situation where we would have to take an overage off of next year's TAC and make the situation even worse. So I may have been too precautionary in making the decision at that point. What happened shortly after that is that landings actually tapered off. And so what we were finding is that although the projection for 92% held for about a week or two, after that it started to go down, and so we started to revisit the issue. So it's a art as much as it's a science, and I think we'll end up around 90%. I'm hoping anyway around 90% of the TAC.
Any other questions for Pat? Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick thing, Pat. If I heard you right, the days at sea lease total for the year was 11,207 days. Would you know what it was compared to last year?
No, sorry. I don't have last year's numbers here. It was 11,279.69, but I could try to get that.
I'd be interested just to see what the increase was with the day at sea.
Or maybe what we could do is at the next council meeting, I'll bring the final total for 2006 as compared to 2005. Is that it?
Yeah, maybe go back to the beginning of the year to see what the program does. What my question is,
is
what
going
change
up?
Happened when we went into 2-to-1 counting and as far as compared to leasing?
Okay.
Paul Howard.
Just mentioning Yellowtail and the joint U.S.-Canada assessment for cod, haddock, and Yellowtail is the end of June, and the council intends to facilitate a meeting with the industry and our U.S. scientists to get the industry's input on Yellowtail and talk about that track. Assessment before the assessment. The Canadians do it, and we thought it'd be a good idea for our industry to meet with the scientists as well. So we're looking at that the first week in June, and right now it looks like staff will chair that meeting, and we'll go out and invite the industry to attend that meeting.
General.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat, I've got two questions, please. One is related to the monkfish. Did I understand you to say that even though the comment period ended on the 4th, that the decision is made for the southern fishery management area to stick with status quo? Is that decision made?
No, if I said that, I misspoke. No final decision has been made, but what's being proposed is to status quo in the south.
Okay. Maybe I misunderstood what you said, but I didn't hear anything about the total closure being another option. That was not clear. So the two options are still a total closure of the Southern Fishery Management Area and the status quo. And, of course, you are aware that the players that we've got in the southern end of the Southern Fishery Management Area, their fishing year is actually May. So if a decision to or a total closure was implemented and a decision made in July after the stock assessment that the season could be opened up and there should be some level that they're out of it, So that is a major concern, and there's been comments submitted to that. Thank you for that. And the other issue was herring. And I know I heard you say that in years 2 and 3 that area TAC 1, the TAC for area 1 has been reduced to the 45,000. Do you know if a decision is made as to whether or not a reserve for that 5,000-ton difference is being considered for areas 2 for January through May and then reverts to area 3 for the rest of the year? Is that decision made, ma'am?
There was no change from the proposed rule.
Dr. Pierce?
Just a quick point for the executive director. You mentioned that there's going to be potentially a meeting with industry first week of June. I'd appreciate it if you would please poll the TMGC members to make sure they're available to be at those meetings. I know I won't be, so it's important that I be there and other TMGC members be there as well. Otherwise, it'll lessen the impact and significance of that meeting with industry.
Anyone else? Noah, General Counsel.
I have really very little to report in the way of litigation. We're still in a holding pattern for the lawsuit challenge Massachusetts and New Hampshire challenging Framework 42. The plaintiffs have requested a further delay of the briefing schedule in order to consider whether they want to move for expanding the administrative record. So we're still looking at cross motions and briefings that would go through August of 07 before they're submitted to the judge. That's all I have.
Any questions for Gene? Science Center.
Thank you very much. My first announcement is that Nancy Thompson was planning to be here today originally, but she is not here. She's the chairman of an expert turtle working group that's meeting this week, and she's at that meeting. So we have Frank Almeida in the audience to answer any difficult questions. I'll start out by talking a little bit about some survey results. The 2007 spring bottom trawl survey was initiated in early March and is on schedule. There were additional random stations added throughout the survey in the mid-Atlantic and in southern New England and on Georgia's Bank to try to take a closer look at scup, black sea bass, and yellowtail flounder. One big result from when there are big toes that are of note, I'd like to mention it. And Russ Brown informed me that they had a huge toe of barn door skate, and it's the largest toe that has been taken in the history of our survey. So they, in this toe, they had many individuals over a meter in length, and the toe had approximately 200 individuals in it. And they were in spawning condition. I know that they quickly measured the ones that they needed to get measurements on, and they were able to return approximately half of the barn door right back into the ocean. With the Bigelow and the Delaware, they both departed on April the 4th to the Bahamas, and they're conducting tests there. And I'm not that familiar with what they're doing, but I think it has to do with the acoustic measurements that the new vessel is capable of making. There will be in Woods Hole a bottom trawl survey calibration design workshop on April the 25th through the 27th. And the Nancy Thompson sent letters to the directors of both councils as well as the ASMFC to invite interested parties to attend and participate in that meeting. It's largely a meeting, it's a statisticians meeting basically, but there will be some important scientific discussions taking place on how to use the year that we have to calibrate between the new vessel and the albatross. And during that year, there are a lot of questions about the proper statistical design to use for the whether to do paired tows with the two vessels or to have one vessel sample for a while and then the other one come in. The group has met for at least the last 2 or 3 months, and they've met monthly. And for this final meeting, they're producing a white paper, which will be the kind of the core paper at the meeting that will be reviewed and presented, and then the scientists, which will include people from outside of the center, will be making decisions about the work plan for the coming year. So that is, again, an open meeting. Then moving on to stock assessment, Pat has already mentioned that we've added a SARC in July for monkfish, and the dates for that will be July 9th through the 11th. And we started with the kind of generic terms of reference for our saw SARCs, and we've gotten feedback from a number of people, including the New England Council, on some modifications to the terms of reference. And we've edited them, and they're in the works. We'll be providing those to the NRCC very soon for their approval. And before the July SARC, we have a SARC in June, which is another very important one, and that is for the Atlantic sea scallop and northern shrimp. Then for the fall SARC, we have striped bass and tilefish on the agenda. Then we've talked a lot about the GARM over the last few years, but it's actually time has passed, and this October will be the first meeting of four meetings that will represent the entire GARM 3 process. So you could put that, there's a data methods meeting, which will be the first meeting, October the 22nd through the 24th in Woods Hole. And I think that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Any questions for Jim? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Jim, the workshop on data poor and data rich assessments, is that a center workshop? I can't recall. And if so, would you remind me when that's scheduled to take place?
Yeah, we haven't forgotten that. The data poor workshop, as you recall, we asked for each of the councils and the ASMFC to provide us with a list of data poor species, and we ended up with, depending on what level you choose, somewhere between 10 and 30 different stocks that were all considered to be data poor. Now, one of the species that was on that list that had a very high priority was monkfish. And with the we had initially talked about having the data poor workshop in July. When monkfish kind of rose to a very high level, we made that our first species that we're tackling, and we're doing that in a very comprehensive way with the full suite of terms of reference. And fortunately, at the national level, there's a group that has started talking about ACLs, annual catch limits, and laboratories all around the country have data poor stocks, and they've been talking about the problems with managing data poor stocks, and they have scheduled a meeting which will take place in Seattle on, I believe that's May 15th to the 17th. And that meeting in Seattle will be, as I said, nationally, but we'll be sending representatives to that meeting. And from each of the centers, as well as regional offices, there will be representatives there. So they'll be trying to deal with how you set annual catch limits in general. But, of course, since every center has data poor stocks, that'll be one of the topics as well. And we're hoping to be able to get, if not specific advice about our stocks, at least some generic ways of managing data poor stocks. So that's how that's being tackled at the moment.
Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to expand a little bit on the Bigelow, the reason she's going to the Bahamas is to run through the naval range down there to do an acoustical to get an acoustical signature of the vessel. But it's going to be a little beyond that. It's going to be really interesting, the first time it's ever happened. She's actually going to make a tow with the midwater gear through that range, worst-case scenario, the auto trawl fails, gear hits the bottom, she hauls back with a cut-in full of very expensive naval sensors, in which Paul Howard's budget goes completely out the window. That's the worst opportunity. But the other is to actually measure what sound that gear creates going through the water. The Oscar Dyson was held the title of the quietest research vessel in the world prior to it running into the rock, which meant the rock didn't hear her coming. And that has not, doesn't hold that title anymore because of the damage to the hull was not repaired correctly. The Bigelow is the quietest vessel in the world. So it'll be interesting to see what the results of this test are. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, thanks, Jim. Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council liaisons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The information from the council meeting is behind. What the hell tab is it? I think 14. You'll see the motions and the council's press release. And as I tried to write up the report, I read the press release and found out they do a lot better job than I'm going to do. So if you want to go through it, what I think of to this council is really important is the first paragraph would be the SCUF plan that was worked out that day. Over the 7-year plan. And it's real interesting that if you read through it, there is they went with a 7-year rebuilding plan with a lot of help from the service, having drafted it so that it's now, it's a 7-year rebuilding plan, but you check it going along the way, and it'll be checked somewhere in comparison to how the Bigelow, after she gets 2 years in of survey work, they start checking, doing a calculation between it, see if we're going to make it in the 7 years, and if in that 7-year period it doesn't look like it'll work, it can expand the plan to 10 years. So in the interest of time, I ain't going to get too deep with it, but it's a pretty interesting afternoon. The rest of it's there. The only other thing I'd like to point out to the council is on the opposite, on the back page of it, we had a presentation from the South Atlantic Executive Assistant Executive Director on some stocks in the Mid-Atlantic. But at the end of the day, what that is, they have stocks from the mid, from the South Atlantic that are moving into the Mid-Atlantic's territory, basically, which, just to put this council on notice, that's happening the other way, too. So what's coming up from the southern is going out to the northern. Thank you.
Any questions for Phil? I noticed an amendment 10 to squid, mackerel, and butterfish. There was a motion to authorize sectors in the Alex and Lolago fishery. I know, Jim, it looks like you were the maker of the motion. Did you want to just briefly describe what's going on with that?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, yeah, that was my motion. Initially, it was not to include Lolago, but there was some discussion by other committee members for that inclusion. But the purpose of this motion was just to create a mechanism to authorize sectors. It had nothing to do with any specific sectors, but since it was the only opportunity probably for the next 2 or 3 years to have that mechanism included in an amendment, which has to be the way it goes, just like you did it, your sector, sir, was through 13, Amendment 13. This provides the mechanism. That's all it does. And that's the intent, was to have that established, and then it allow any sectors to come forward. I would expect to see one out of the ELEX fishery in the next year or two through a framework. But it was just to take advantage of an opportunity of an amendment in play being developed and to utilize it for that mechanism and that mechanism only. Thank you.
And you're still moving forward with, I forget what amendment it is, for limited access in mackerel?
That sir, is Amendment 11. And actually, it would have fit better in it because it's, you know, the 10 was an amendment to deal with the overfishing of butterfish. But again, it's the opportunity to put it in it. So after discussions with Ms. Kirkland and George Darcy and Joel McDonald, it was decided that it was a good use of an opportunity. So it's included in there for that purpose. Amendment 11 is still being developed. We had a committee meeting middle of last month. We'll have one ahead of our next council meeting next week, but that's still a few meetings away and a few years away from actually being submitted.
I asked those two questions because I was just curious whether or not it was decided that it was a requirement to have limited access before you do form a sector or not, if that was a requirement of a sector under the new LAP provisions.
Well, I recognize that, but the ELEX fishery and the Lalago fishery are not. Amendment 11 does not deal with anything but mackerel. So that's part of the reason we tried to keep it. Part of my rationale for including it 10 was that Amendment 11 is strictly a mackerel amendment.
Thank you. Any other questions? Dr. Pierce.
This is for Phil or his brother Jim. And this is with regard to the motion that was made that carried on SCUP rebuilding. It's a long motion, and I'm not sure that I understand the motion, so let me see if I can phrase a question that be to the point. The Division of Marine Fisheries commented on the SCUP rebuilding schedule, what the Middle Atlantic Council was intending to do or proposing to do. And we raised some very important questions about the Bigelow versus the Albatross, the fact that this is an index-based stock, and that with the Bigelow, we are going to have to get some very good comparison factors in order to keep the time series going. Otherwise, without a time series, we were no longer in a position to know where we are relative to a target and rebuilding. So, Phil or Jim, how does this motion, how does this council decision relate to concerns expressed by the division and by others, including yourselves, as to whether we'll actually be able to use the Bigelow in the future to determine where we are relative to where we were and where we need to go? New net, new vessel. SCUP's awful hard to assess. We know that. So could you try to answer that question for me?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Pierce touched on some very sensitive issues that were raised during this conversation, and Philly also noted that the service was very helpful in coming to what the end of the motion describes. And you are correct. We do have some concerns, Dr. Pierce, as to what the capability of the new vessel will be. The intent of the motion was to allow that time series to at least get off the ground. One or two years of the new survey, the new vessel, the new gear being in place should give us something. If it cannot be correlated back to what the existing series, time series provides, then at least you'll start with that data and make decisions based on that going forward. Anything less than that, in the 7 years, we felt like we wouldn't have an opportunity to have the new vessel in gear make that determination for us. So it looked like it was the only way to bridge the gaps that are going to be created as this transition takes place, Dr. Pierce. Does that answer your question, sir?
In part. Thank you, Jim. Well, again, we anxiously await to see how things work out with the Bigelow. We're hopeful that for all these different stocks, SCUP, Seabass, you name it, we're going to be in a position to have some comparison factors to continue the time series. Otherwise, you know, I don't know where we're going to go with how we deal with SCUP management and overfishing concerns and rebuilding overfished stocks, that stuff, SCUP in particular.
Any other questions? Okay, U.S. Coast Guard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. Since we last met, we conducted 8 fish and vessel search and rescue cases in February and March, with 5 lives saved and, thankfully, none lost. 2 most significant cases were the Creole Belle down off of Nantucket Shoals and the Luke and Jody up in the coastal waters of down east Maine. We also conducted a medevac from a crew member from a fishing vessel that was 105 miles east of Provincetown, Massachusetts, and really needed to get into the hospital. And there are no hospitals 105 miles east of Nantucket, so I was pleased to ride in our helicopter that night. We made a particular effort to pre-position search and rescue assets to go down off the elephant trunk for that opener, and thankfully there were no search and rescue cases involved with that, but had there been, we would have been there and ready to respond. Admiral Sullivan and I attended the Maine Fishermen's Forum, where we were pleased to participate in the in-pool safety sessions we were doing, showing off survival suits to fishermen and giving them a chance to get in them and see what they're like. A lot of fun, and I highly encourage anybody who has not themselves been in a survival suit to take advantage of one of these safety forums to try them out. Get a real confidence boost from doing so. Enforcement-wise, we conducted 195 at-sea boardings with only three fisheries violations. So that's a 98.5% compliance rate, and our thanks and compliments to industry for that high rate of compliance. Not so good in the safety stuff, though. There were 35 individual violations, so there's about a 92% compliance rate on safety issues. And we actually had to terminate the voyages of three fishing vessels, send them home, for lack of our survival craft, lack of survival suits, and lack of firefighting equipment. We're in the final stages of distributing our last weights to the cutters that do offshore boardings. We have a sample of a 5-kilogram net weight and a 8-kilogram net weight with us today. If anybody would like to see those, they'll be up in the corner here afterwards, and you can pick them up and heave them around and get an idea for what they're like. We also attended a safety forum in New Bedford, two of them actually, that were sponsored by Congressman Frank. Congressman Frank said they were listening sessions, and that the point was to bring the Coast Guard and other government agencies together to listen to the community, fishing community in New Bedford, and see what ideas they might have regarding improving fishing vessel safety. At the end of the forums, he expressed support for continued voluntary safety training, English language lessons for fishermen, and continuing efforts to leverage VMS technology to improve fisheries safety. Additionally, the Coast Guard is adding a basic icing awareness module to our ongoing commercial fishing vessel safety training programs. And that's pretty much all I have.
Thanks, Joe. Any questions? Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, along with what the numbers you just gave, would you have a yearly total on the boardings and compliance type figure?
We keep those statistics, so I don't have them with me today.
I'd be interested in seeing what part. I mean, I'm very encouraged to see whatever that 98.5 and 92 on safety, but I would like to see what it is like over a year or over a little span.
Sure, we'll bring them in next time.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, moving on. NIMS Enforcement. Anyone here from NIMS Enforcement? Okay, moving on. Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. Anyone have anything on that? Okay. Phil, did you want to bring up something about the trial committee, or is that your brother?
Yeah, I did, but Woody left on me. But just, the trial committee met, last week?
Yeah.
Rodney probably go into it a little better. There was a couple issues came up that I thought should be brought forward. Jimmy ain't here. We met.
It was Tuesday and Wednesday, right?
I missed the first day, but they had a tour of the Bigelow and looked the ship all over. And on the second day, we got into a whole bunch of different discussions. What I think is really important, it kind of leads to what Dr. Pierce was just talking about, is this trying to calibrate is going to be a huge issue. And if you remember, at the last committee council meeting, we forwarded a motion where the trial committee and both councils have recommended that the net go forward with a two-suite design. At this meeting, we're getting quite a bit of concern from the Science Center people, just the people who put the numbers together, stock assessment people, and how this calibration is going to take place with the two suites. And at the end of the day, what I took away from it is they have a big concern in trying to make the two-sweep system work in the time period that's going to be allowed for calibration. And that's where the huge concern comes from. To Dr. Pierce's question, trying to calibrate between the Albatross and the Bigelow on this index survey without changing this sweep, using this sweep, is going to create quite a, in my mind, a difference. It's not what we had really figured to put in there to catchability or whatever. To me, it's just an issue, but the end of the issue is if they only have a year to do the calibration instead of the 3 years that we originally started with, we're down a year or less. If they only have the funding in the ship to do that 1 year, we're going to get kind of locked into a box here that I'm not sure we really wanted to. I just want to make the council aware of it. You know, we passed a motion that said we recommended the two sweeps. And there's not opposition to the two sweeps. The problem is they won't have the funding or the ship to get that done in the time frame. So I just want to make everybody aware. I don't know that we need an action.
Jim, did you want to add anything to that?
Not just briefly, Mr. Chairman, what the committee's recommendation was. I'm sorry I was out of room for that. But the committee's recommendation was if it's determined at this workshop that's coming up that the calibration is not going to be sufficient with the old net and two sweeps as opposed to what it could possibly provide with the old net and one sweep, the committee could support that as long as it's very clear that after the calibration cruises are completed, that the Bigelow will actually start conducting calibration cruises, rock hopper sweep against flat sweep aboard its own vessel at the first opportunity. So then you'd have the same vessel using the same gear with both sweeps. That calibration could be factored in after we get over this point of the lack of information that we're all going to be facing. So the committee's recommendation, and it was, you know, not taken at all lightly, that we do not completely depart from the two sweeps, but we could understand because of the constraints and the need to have some information that we could support the two sweeps, a two-step approach to the two sweeps, I think is the way it was titled, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well, it's important to keep the council informed of the developments of this ongoing survey situation. Mine's much sharper and more attuned to these types of questions and decision-making are involved in this, other than the council, but it's important for the council to know what's going on as well. So thank you. Rodney?
Yeah, I took a little different perspective away from that. I mean, I did feel that there was a lot of opposition against the two sweeps. And we did make concessions to allow for the two sweeps were the areas. We let them choose the areas where they would do the most damage that the rock hoppers would. But I still felt that there was some of the science did not want to use two sweeps. I definitely came away from that meeting with that feeling.
Thank you.
Morning. Frank Almeida, Deputy Director of the Science Center. I don't disagree with you, Rodney, but I think that's the idea of the fact that this is a science decision that's going to need to be made. There are a couple of things here. People need to understand that this calibration experiment and the conversion of the Albatross to the Bigelow is probably the most important thing we've done in 44 years since the survey began. There's a steering committee that's made up of myself, Mike Fogarty, Wendy Gabriel, some pretty big minds, with the exception of maybe me, that we meet every other week, and the PopDi folks and the survey folks meet every month to develop the white paper, to have discussions about this. I know that there was a presentation given at the trawl advisory panel to talk about the two sweeps. And you're right. I mean, You get five scientists in a room together when you're going to get five different opinions. And there are some people that don't like the idea of the two sweeps. There are others that do. And I think that the important point here is that this is a scientific decision that's going to be made. And the idea of having everyone that could potentially provide input into the calibration experiments, including the two sweeps, should be at that calibration workshop. It's going to be an important workshop, and it's going to direct the experiment that gets done that whole year. The other thing is I think we need to go back and review the actual language of the motion, because I believe it said one or two. It did not say two.
We got to look at that, because the intent was the two sweep. That was clear, and everybody pretty much assured it. We'll have to look at the language, Frank. But the reason I bring it up is I don't disagree. It's a scientific, analysis needs to be done, and that's how the decision should be made. My concern is that the scientific decision is going to be somewhat near driven by the budget and the time frame allowed for this, and that's what I got out of this, your people the other day, that what you're going to have available to do it is what's going to control this, and that's the issue to me. Not the scientific people, I have a lot of faith in, but are they going to be controlled by the budget?
One last thing. And I don't disagree with that either. It could. I mean, we've been struggling to get 1 year, and we might be up to 14 months now, but I think we have the 1 year. And if, in fact, people need to understand that there has not been a decision made. This is something that's going to come out of the calibration workshop. And the notion, the idea that if the most efficient way to use that 1 year is to calibrate to the rock hopper, we'll do that. And then we need to figure out a way to look at the rock hopper versus the cookie sweep.
Thanks, Frank. I had a question. Where are we in the discussions about the nearshore areas that the Bigelow won't be able to survey? Are you negotiating with the states to find a way to have their surveys supplement?
Well, yeah. We should report on this also, and I'll let Jim didn't. ASMFC has about $278,000 to contribute towards the NEMAP survey in the fall of 2007. We sent a letter to Vince O'Shea, I think it was last week, indicating that we're going to contribute $300,000 to that survey beginning immediately. In fact, I'm doing an email now with our grants office to figure out how to get the $300,000 to fully fund at least that fall survey to get the survey to begin. One of the stipulations we made in the letter to Vince was that it cover the entire area from the western border of Massachusetts down to Cape Hatteras. This is a little bit of an issue because the pilot survey only went up to Montauk, and now we add maybe a couple days and maybe up to 10 stations. So we've got that issue to deal with, and also an important issue that we need to deal with is determining, and this will come out of the Survey Restratification Working Group or something. I forget what the name is. But to determine what the inshore extent of the offshore survey is, and that's going to be determined by the captain of the vessel, saying we're going to go to 60 feet or we're going to go to 90 feet. We need to determine what the inshore extent of the offshore survey is going to be, and that will determine the offshore extent of the inshore survey. All that stuff is happening right now with the intent that the NEMAP survey covering the area from Cape Hatteras to the western extent of the state of Mass survey will begin this September.
Yeah, Frank, I've been very worried about this. The survey stations that the Bigelow, that the Albatross had over the years, and we've got tons of data. With the Bigelow, they won't go to those stations because of the draft of the Bigelow. I'm very concerned about Gulf of Maine cod, Gulf of Maine yellowtail, all those stocks north of this Massachusetts survey that we've had those stations. And what is it going to do to the assessment when, you know, we're in for a huge adjustment? And I'm just concerned about those stations that will be missed. What are we going to do with those stations that are missed?
I'm not sure the actual number of those stations that we're going to lose from the Bigelow, but we do have, in fact, the beginnings, actually the really good beginnings of a time series for the Maine, New Hampshire inshore survey. And we actually contribute to that a fairly substantial amount of money every year, and we have for the last 4 or 5 years. So New Hampshire, Maine, the New Hampshire Maine survey does in fact cover the waters from where the state of Mass survey, the northern extent of the state of Mass survey, up through down East Maine. So we actually have some information from that survey as well.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I didn't know if you wanted to bring this up now, but we were going to report on some of this under the Research Steering Committee. We had these discussions of what money was available. I don't know if you want to bring it up now or wait till that report.
Frank, are you going to be here on Thursday morning? I guess we could wait till Thursday morning, but thanks, Dave. Anyone else? Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I think Frank touches on a very important issue here, that the meeting that's going to take place that makes the decision on this two-sweep issue, anybody that participates in that needs to go in there with the knowledge that the Troll Committee supported the two sweeps, which also supported eliminating the winter survey, which uses a flat sweep. So now you've got two surveys, and either one of them are going to use the flat sweep. So the intent of the committee and the councils, and I think you touch on another sensitive issue here. We all know the wording of the motion, but I think it's very clear what the intent of the council was as to the two sweep deal. It's not the council's decision. We recognize that. But the fact is that winter survey may be completely eliminated, and it is the only survey using the flat gear. It was created to provide better information for bottom-dwelling fish. So, you know, it's a big deal all the way around, and people that participate in the meeting may want to make sure that that's an issue that is kept on the table. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Thanks, Frank. Okay, we're going to take a break. Karen, do you have the coordinating council motion? Can you put that up on the board before we break? Okay, Paul, can you provide a little background?
Sure. As many of you know, that the new Magnuson Act established the council coordinating committees. There's one yearly meeting in May that all the council chairs and executive directors get together, and usually we meet in the winter to talk about budget as well. And the new act either set up or... We got this email from Washington, the lawyers, that said that it isn't clear whether the act actually set up these coordinating committees or if each council has to do it. So because there was some concern by the lawyers in Washington, NIMS Silver Spring gave us this motion and asked each council to approve this, which would set up these council coordinating committees to give advice to NIMS and to meet with NIMS at least once or twice a year. So I hope this is just a formality, but this is the motion that NIMS Silver Spring asked us to approve so that we wouldn't have to worry about whether the Act actually established these committees or if the councils have to do it. And it's a matter of FACA issues. If we're meeting with NIMS on budgets in January and on just in general once a year in May, then we should be FACR exempt. And there was some question about whether council chairs and vice chairs meeting with NIMS, are they really FACR exempt or are the councils FACR exempt? So Congress established these CCCs, which are FACR exempt. So if you bless this, then they're FACR exempt and we can meet and advise NIMS.
I need somebody to make the motion and second it. Motion made by Tom Hill, seconded by Rip Cunningham. Discussion on the motion. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Paul, is this an initiative that will be undertaken by all the other councils? Okay, so it's all right. So we're basically recommending that the council support a multi-council effort to establish this council coordinating committee. Why are other council members not voting members? What's the logic behind that? I can see staff not being a voting member, but why are the other council members?
Well, they had to establish, we've been meeting for almost 30 years, once or twice a year, and it's always been the chairs, vice chairs, and the executive directors. So to institutionalize that meeting and to know who the, you know, who the body of voting members are to, you know, submit a position or whatever, this was the actual makeup of the committee that they decided.
Anyone else? Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a review of NOAA's aquaculture program. Dr. Mike Rubino is going to be presenting, so we'll have some time to set up. Be back at 15 minutes.
Okay, if everybody could take their seats, we'll take up the 10:30 agenda item. Okay, Dr. Mike Rubino is going to be presenting, I think, a 15 or 20-minute breakdown of the aquaculture bill. Is that right?
That's one of the topics, yes.
Okay. Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready. I'm Michael Rubino. I'm the manager of NOAA's aquaculture program. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and